All right, so we'll say good afternoon. So first, I also want to thank Alan and his firm for hosting this beautiful Lunch and Learn, and thank you to Mayor for coordinating some of the logistics, and I think for being the innovator and originator of this Lunch and Learn. Hopefully after Pesach and Yiratz Hashem, we'll do it with a little bit greater frequency, God willing, a little bit greater regularity. So what I wanted to discuss today, a little in Yoni Diyoma, is to focus a little bit on the Haggadah. But, you know, instead of just doing a little varta, a little idea, to try to develop a little bit more of a theme. So let's begin with number one. So remember, right from the beginning of the Haggadah, so halach ma'anya diachalu avasana ba'ared mitzrayim. So this is the bread of affliction that our forefathers ate in Egypt. Kaldich v'nye sevi echal, whoever who is hungry, come and eat. Kalditzich ye sevi ifsach, whoever is in need, come. Literally, the translation here is, join us for the Pesach Seder. Hashata hacha, this year we are here. L'shana haba ba'ared Yisrael, next year in Eretz Yisrael. Hashata avdi, this year we are in servitude. L'shana haba b'nei chor, next year, Mirtz Hashem, we will be free. What are the obvious questions? What are the not so obvious questions? Alan, we're going to serve lunch next time after this year. That's it. I'm sorry. So first of all, where does this come from? Now, why do you ask that question? Because at first glance, remember, what language is halach ma'anya? Aramaic. What language is the rest of the Haggadah? Hebrew. So it indicates to us that clearly the Baal Haggadah, whoever assembled the Haggadah, did not originally have in it halach ma'anya. And in fact, we know historically, halach ma'anya is an add-on to the Haggadah. So the question of, so that already grabs our attention as to why this particular paragraph is being added on. Good. What other questions?
So if you're inviting people, they should hopefully have a place.
Good. So remember again, when is halach ma'anya being recited? So halach ma'anya, technically, it's the beginning of Magid, although it's really kind of in that little bit of Haggadic no man's land. Because remember, at this point in time, we've already done Kadesh, Orchatz, Karpas, Yachatz. So we're already not well into the Seder, but we're into the Seder already. Remember, we've made Kiddush, which on the Leil HaSeder, of course, is not just Kiddush, but is also the first of the Dalet Kosos, the first of the four cups. So it's, of course, immediately strange. It's here, we're going in and we're inviting people. But what do you mean you're inviting people? First of all, where are you? Again, remember, it's one thing if we would go to the door like we would by the end of the Seder, by like Shvo Chamascha, and we make this recitation into the streets, and you could say, okay, maybe somebody's passing by. I'm going to catch them and chap them as they're wandering around, and I'll invite them to come in. But of course, this is not being said to the public. This is being said to everybody at my table. Hopefully, the people who are sitting at my table are there because I invited them, and are there because they have a seat there. So, okay, it might be nice to affirm the fact that they are indeed invited, but it's a strange invitation. If it was truly a legitimate invitation, where should it have been?
At
this door. First of all, again, it should have been at the beginning of the Seder. Really, maybe it should have been in Shul. But if it's not in Shul, at least at the beginning of the Seder. And certainly, again, it should have been done at the door. At least others have the ability to hear me. Good. What are the problems? So far we have Aramaic. So far we have, again, what kind of invitation is this? What else?
We end the Haggadah with the Shana
Habavim Shalom. Oh.
Aren't we getting ahead of ourselves?
Excellent. So first of all, what is very interesting just about halach ma'anya in general is that halach ma'anya almost seems to capture the entirety of the Seder within one paragraph. So as Alan said very nicely, we're skipping ahead a little bit. Remember, the Seder has two parts. This is very important because often this goes unnoticed. It goes unnoticed for a very good reason. You know, there is a part of the Seder after benching. Well, many people don't know this. There is a part of the Seder after benching. We tend to have difficulty remembering that part of the Seder from year to year. We're in and out of consciousness by that time. But there is a very important part. Now, what's the difference between the first part of the Seder up until the meal, Shulchan Orech, and the last part of the Seder? What's the difference? It's like a beginner's Judaism course here, right? But it's very humble. So two separate mitzvahs, but thematically, what's different?
More towards the geula.
Oh, the first part of the Seder up until the meal is focused on Egyptian servitude and redemption. It's all about Yitzias Yisrael. Remember, again, the shift actually, that's right, what's the concluding paragraph of the first part of Magid? Lefichach anachnu chayavim lahodos. Because of everything we just recounted, we spoke about servitude, we spoke about geula, we are obligated to go ahead and remember all that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us. So the beginning of the Seder is all about shibud and geulas mitzrayim, enslavement and emancipation and redemption from Egypt. The second part of the Seder is all messianically focused. It is all about the Geula. It's all about Mashiach. That's why, of course, again, what act is it that really begins the second part of the Seder? The truth is, this is a difficult question. Hallel, but even before Hallel, is the filling up of Kosher Eliyahu. Right? That's really the act. That is the act, ultimately, that kicks off the second part of the Seder, because it's all about Geula. That's why, again, we even split up Hallel, because the first part of Hallel that we say before the meal, that's focused on giving Shevach V'Odah, giving thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Yetzias Mitzrayim. The second part of Hallel is what we'll call anticipatory praise. It's where we are proactively praising the Ribono Shel Olam with the hope and expectation that he's going to bring Mashiach. So it is interesting, as Al mentioned, that Halach Ma'anya kind of jumps to that idea. We're suddenly mentioning Yerushalayim before we have even begun to discuss or to mention anything about Egyptian servitude or emancipation. So good. Now, there are a number of any other suggestions?
We start by Lashon Bav Eretz Yisrael, then Lashon Bav Bnei
Chorin. Oh, excellent. What order would you have put it in?
Because we should be Bnei Chorin first.
Oh. It's interesting to note that we first say this year we're here, next year Eretz Yisrael. This year we're free, next year we're free. One would have thought intuitively the order would be reversed. That ultimately, again, this year we're free, this year we're slaves, next year we're free, and then this year we're here, next year Eretz Yisrael. Good. What's the other question? And this is something you're going to have to, you know, sometimes, you know, it's interesting in general about Judaism is that we grow up. If a person, let's say, had it doesn't matter if a person has a background or not. We often have certain assumptions about Judaism. And sometimes to be able to broaden your spiritual horizons, so you have to challenge those assumptions a little bit. So for example, the phrase, L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim, or L'shana haba b'Eretz Yisrael, is such an incredibly important phrase. But if you take a step back for a moment, what's problematic about that phrase?
Why not now?
Right, why not now? You ever wonder about that, right? We say next year, which is interesting, by the way, because remember, the Rambam in the Yud Gimel Ikarim, right? The Rambam has 13 principles of faith. Just as an aside, by the way, you know, the Rambam was one of the first person to ever come up with principles of faith. No one before the Rambam really did that, and that's for a variety of different reasons, not for this year. In any event, the Rambam says that one of the Yud Gimel Ikari Imun is that we have to believe in Mashiach. And how does our belief in Mashiach manifest itself? What does it mean to believe in Mashiach? Achakelo b'chol yom sheyavo. The belief in Messianic redemption is not like, oh, I believe in the future Mashiach is going to come. It's Mamish, the Rambam says that the belief in Mashiach means that I believe today he can come. And I have to believe that every single day could be the day. So it's interesting that on one hand, when it comes to Mashiach, I want to believe that he could come every day. But yet here at the Seder, we say, next year in Jerusalem. Why not tomorrow? Why not next month? Now again, there's a simple answer to that. What's the simple answer to that?
Next Pesach.
Next Pesach. Next Pesach. It doesn't mean that it shouldn't be tomorrow. But I hope that this will be the last Pesach, excuse me, that I'm celebrating here. Miratz Hashem, next Pesach I'll be there. But still, the verbiage is interesting. So again, so these are our questions. Why Aramaic? Why are we inviting guests over here? Why are we inviting guests at this part of the Seder? And why the order? Why do we say this year we're here, next year Yerushalayim, or Eretz Yisrael, this year we're free, this year we're slaves, next year we're free? Why not reverse that order? And lastly, why do we say this year we're here, next year Yerushalayim? Why don't we say this now we're here, and tomorrow, or next week, or next month, or soon, we should be in Yerushalayim. So let's analyze this a little bit.
Do people in Eretz Yisrael say?
Oh, good. We're going to get to that. Baruch Shekivanta. We're going to get to that. Excellent. So first of all, there's a source I actually didn't put on the sheet. There's a beautiful Haggadah called the Minchas Asher. So the Minchas Asher is Rav Asher Weiss, who is a very prominent posek in Eretz Yisrael. So he actually wrote a commentary on the Haggadah, which is very beautiful, a combination of both halacha as well as a little bit of drash. And he says something fascinating on the. I apologize, I forgot to put it on the sheet. See, he says, Halach Ma'anya, he seizes on the idea that Halach Ma'anya is written in Aramaic. So we know again that Aramaic became the vernacular of the Jewish people when? Right. After the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, during Galus Babel, during Babylonian exile, so that's when Aramaic really became the vernacular. We know that, by the way, also because the Rambam writes at the beginning of Hilchos Tefillah that who created Shemona Esrei?
One second.
Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Good men of the Great Assembly. When did they create it? After the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. And the Rambam there says something amazing. The Rambam says that tefillah was never codified. There was never a standardized text for tefillah. Why not? Because if you think about it, this goes back to our last year. So tefillah is not supposed to be scripted. Tefillah is supposed to be a dialogue with the divine, which is supposed to be a spontaneous, verbal, dialogical connection. There is not supposed to be a script that you're supposed to read from. But the Rambam writes in the beginning of Hilchos Tefillah, it was a problem. Because during Babylonian exile, Jews were not conversant in Hebrew, and they weren't fully conversant in Aramaic either. So therefore, the rabbis felt the need to create a text in order for people to be able to have some type of framework for this experience. So this two experiences, what they call the Shbaruchu. So Rav Weiss was something amazing. He says that, you know, there's an obligation, to remember Churban Beis HaMikdash, as the Navi says, Al Rosh Simchasi. Right, every single time we have a simcha, we are obligated to remember the destruction of Yerushalayim. So Rav Weiss suggests that this paragraph of Halach Ma'anya was inserted later on after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash as a form of Zecher L'Churban. He says that's why it's written in Aramaic, because Aramaic was the vernacular of the Jew after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and he says something amazing. He's listened to this phrase. He says, because he's bothered by what we're bothered by. What do you mean, kol dichvin yesei v'yecho, kol ditzrich yesei v'yifsach? What kind of invitation is this if we've already sat down to eat? He says something amazing. It's not an invitation. He says, it's zecher l'churban. What is the one night of the year that you cannot have last-minute company? The one night of the year with no last-minute company? Pesach is a solid guess, right? Right? And why Pesach? Why Pesach? Oh, because remember again, Karban Pesach was shechted on Erev Pesach, right? By Chatzos. You had to be part of a Chabura. You had to be part of a group for Karban Pesach. You cannot just decide on, you know, like, you cannot just decide, you know, on Pesach night, oh, did you see the Schwartz's Karban Pesach? Mamish, that looks amazing. I'm going over there. You can't do that. Whatever Chabura you are part of at midday on Erev Yontiv, that's who you eat Karban Pesach with. So says Rav Weiss something absolutely amazing, that when we begin the Seder, the first order of business is to mourn the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. That is the first order of business. How do we do that? Is it an invitation? It's not an invitation. You know what it is? It's a lamentation. We're lamenting the fact that if I wanted to, I can invite last-minute company today. Am I really inviting anyone? No. But my heart is so broken that if I wanted to, technically I could, because there is no Karban Pesach. And he takes it a step further, and this is amazing. He says, he quotes a Yerushalmi, and this is really mind-blowing. He quotes a Yerushalmi that says that on Erev Pesach, people used to go, wealthier people. Remember, you know, the whole chap of Karban Pesach is you had to get a chabura together, because remember again, a lamb, no matter how much you like meat, you cannot polish off a lamb by yourself, or just, you know, with a group of your, you really,
it's dessert.
It's also dessert, correct. You've already, you're it's ne'achal ha'asova. You have to get people. So the Yerushalmi says something amazing. Yerushalmi says that on Erev Pesach, people would walk in the marketplace and they would call out, kol ditzrich yesei v'yifsach, on Erev Pesach in the morning. Does anyone need a place for Karban Pesach? Does anyone need to be part of a chabura? So Rabbi says, this is literally, we're using the same verbiage that our ancestors used specifically during the times of the Second Temple to invite people to join their Pesach. But of course, we're not reciting it as an invitation. We're reciting it how? Again, almost as a zecher to the Mikdash. So this is really amazing. So this frames, first of all, the whole Seder in a different way. The first order of business, before we even get to Yetzias Rahim, which is, by the way, you know, Rav Soloveitchik writes about this idea. Rav Soloveitchik says that the Jew has this concept that he calls of the unitive time consciousness. What's unitive time consciousness? That we live haya, hove, v'yihye, all at one time. Past, present, and future kind of combine into one spiritual consciousness. Just like the Ribono Shel Olam is past, present, and future simultaneously, we have this as well. So it's amazing that on a night that we are supposed to be devoted to remembering Egyptian servitude and emancipation, the first thing we start with is Churban Beis HaMikdash. Like the timeline is totally, but again, for the Jew, the searing pain that I carry with me every single day. The truth is, it's not about Egyptian servitude. The searing pain I carry with me every single day is the absence of my beautiful and beloved Beis HaMikdash. So that's what we start to say there with according to Ravais. That's why it's in Aramaic, vernacular of the people. Use the same exact verbiage. If I wanted to have last minute company today, I could. This is the verbiage they used to invite people on Erev Pesach, and we say it as a form of lamenting the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. That's Rav Asher Ais. Take a look at number two. So according to you over here, from the Haggadah of Rav Soloveitchik. Now, the Rav did not write a Haggadah. The Rav, interestingly enough, Rav Soloveitchik wrote very little. The reason why it's actually interesting, the longer the Rav is no longer alive, the more stuff he comes out with. It's amazing. You know, every single year, there's something new from the Rav. So there's an important reason for that. The Rav did not really want to commit anything to writing, because the Rav's thoughts were always evolving. They were always evolving. And the problem with the written word is, it is what it is. You know, once you write something, so it's there, it's static. Now, of course, the greatness of the written word, it gives the ability to disseminate your thoughts to a much greater audience. But the Rav was always hesitant to write things down, because if I say this now, if you put it in print, then that becomes the unequivocal MS, the Dore Doris for future generations. And I'm not ready to make that level of intellectual commitment. But of course, after Rav passed away, so people assembled all of his Torahs. There's a beautiful, it's called Haggadah Siach HaGrid. Conversation HaGrid is Gagon Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. So he says over here something amazing. And this is, I'm going to tell you, this is going to forever change your Pesach. Let's take a look at number two. V'yesh La'ayin, by paragraph Aleph. So the Rav says, there's a question, fundamental question. Lama maskilim es Haggadah b'halach ma'anyo? Why do we begin the Haggadah with Halach Ma'anyo? How sekis b'achnasas archim? So the Rav again is focusing on the Hachnasas Archim piece, right? Why do we have to focus on Hachnasas Archim? Why is that the focus here? No one's going to disagree that hospitality is a very important mitzvah. That's for sure. But what does it have to do with the Haggadah? Right, very important. Now look what he quotes over here, Gemara in Meseches Tainis. Va'ayin betainis, derav huna b'chol yom, ki havakarech rifta, haya omer koman ditzarech leisei v'lecho, v'lo rak b'leil haseder. So this is very interesting. Rav Huna, every single day before he would sit down to have his meal, or as he would sit down to have his meal, so he'd make an announcement. And what was the announcement? Whoever wants to go ahead and eat can join us to eat. So Rav Huna made this announcement every single day. So I understand if somebody's living their lives that every single time they're saying, you know, we're having a lunch and learn and there's David Shoes, whoever's hungry, come and eat. If you're saying that every single day, fine. But if you're not saying that every single day, then why Dafka Leil HaSeder? Paragraph B, get ready for this. V'nira lomar, dihine eved eino yochol lahachnis archim. Rav Soloveitchik says, an eved cannot do achnasas archim. An eved can't have guests, can't do hospitality. Why? The ha kaimalon, ma shekana ha eved kana rabo, the ein lo eved nechasim, the gam ein lo bayis. So the Rav says, in order to do achnasas archim, in order to be a hospitable person, in order to be a host, you have to have what? You have to have what? You have to have stuff. You have to own stuff. Right? It was like, klal gadol is, you can't do achnasas archim with someone else's stuff. I mean, it's a good thing to know in general. Just like you can't do tzedakah with someone else's money, right? So you can't do achnasas archim, right? Ah, Chaim, you know what? Why don't you come over to the Raskuses? You know, come for the whole yontif. You know, make yourself at home, right? Right? You can't do that. That's not. That might be mayor's mitzvah, but that's not going to be my mitzvah. So says the Rav, an eved can't do achnasas archim because an eved lacks the fundamental ability to own or possess anything. Because whatever an Eved owns automatically becomes the possessions of his master. Therefore, says the Rav, we begin the Haggadah with Hachnasas Archim. Va'omrim, kol dichvin yesei v'yechol, whoever is hungry, come and eat. Tezeo derech eros. This is a behavioral manifestation of our newfound freedom. Laharos she'in anu avadim ela b'nei chorin, shanu machnisim archim. So according to the Rav, what's the role? So according to the Rav, is it a real invitation?
No.
No. What is it? It's a declaration of my newfound freedom. What it's saying is, if I wanted to have guests over Pesach, if I wanted to have guests at the Seder, I could. Am I actively inviting anyone new? No, I'm not inviting anyone now. V'haraya, I'm speaking to the people at my table. I'm not going to the door. The seder is already underway. We've already made Kiddush, the first Adar Kosos. So I'm not inviting anyone. But I'm making a statement that if I wanted to go ahead and have guests, if I wanted to engage in hospitality, I could. Do you know why? Do you know why? Because I'm free.
But according to the Rav, why would we then need to talk about your Shalayim and things along that line?
So,
or even more strongly, why does it say Hashata Avdi?
Good. So the answer is, we're going to see that no one opinion is actually going to answer all of our questions. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to link everything together at the end. You're right. The Rav does not address the second part of the Haggadah at all. He's really fixated on the invitation. Just like Asher Weiss, now, according to Rav Weiss, it makes a lot more sense because the whole thing is Zecha L'Chorban. If the whole thing is Zecha L'Chorban, I understand the end as well. The Rav is not addressing that at all. He's just addressing the Akhnas HaZarchim.
You're in the placement of it. It should have come earlier on as a prelude even to Kiddush and everything else. You're already leaning by Kiddush, but if that's, someone's bringing you the cup. So start off by saying...
So why is it here? Right. You're saying, right. Why not put Alachmai in the beginning? Right. Oh, good. So listen to this. So I think that there are two ways that you could understand what the Rav is saying. You could understand that, meaning if you're a real brisker, so you're going to say that what the Rav is saying is, there is a chalos shem chayrus, right? I am a cheftza of a ben chorin. I'm an entity of being a free person because I have the ability to invite. So again, you could look at it in a very analytical sense that there's nothing really deep or mushy or emotional over here, just simply talking about my rights and my abilities. And I have the ability to invite, and maybe I will invite, maybe I won't invite. That's inconsequential. But the ability to invite, by definition, is the manifestation of my freedom. But I think what the Rav is saying over here is something much deeper. You know, there is, what's the goal of the Leil HaSeder? This is very important to Yisod. What is the goal of the Seder night?
Transformation.
Transformation, good. Good, what else? Mesorah. I'm sorry?
Mesorah.
Handing over the Mesorah, good. What else?
Emunah.
Emunah, good. Reenactment, you said reenactment? Good, it's a little bit more than reenactment. What is it?
Reliving.
Reliving. Remember again, the Mishnah in Pesachim explicitly says it. We actually say it in the Haggadah, Chayev Adam Liros his Asmo Ki'ilu Hu Yatsa Mimitzrayim. The goal of the Seder night is to view myself as if I have left Egypt, which is another way of saying that the goal of the Seder night is to experience freedom. The goal is I begin the Seder one way, and by the end of the night, I have to feel like a ben chorin, like a free person. But what's the kasha? What's the problem? Or what's the question? So first of all, we don't necessarily have a context. Good. Simpler. What is freedom? What is the definition of freedom? What does it mean to be free? So for example, one thing we know freedom does not mean is?
Do whatever you want.
Right? That's clear. That's clear, right? Because we left Mitzrayim, and then 49 days later, we have this voluminous, you know, amount of law called Torah. So at the end of the day, clearly freedom does not mean what you do what you want. So what does freedom mean?
I think it means responsibility for what you do.
Okay, responsibility for what you do. Good, good.
But if you were a slave, you have to do what your master says. So this is the opposite. I'm not doing what I don't want to do.
Okay, good, good. I think the Rav would say that, you know what the real definition of freedom is? This is a Yesodistic idea, a very important fundamental idea. The real definition of freedom is the ability to think about and to be concerned for the other. That's freedom. Because a slave is concerned with who? A slave is concerned with himself, right? Survival. A slave is concerned with absolute survival. Remember, again, when a person is in servitude, a person is living through ridiculously barbaric circumstances, they need to marshal all of their inner emotional resources and kochos to simply survive, keep their head above water. There is very little time to be able to think about the other. You know, it's interesting. Elie Wiesel writes an incredible... The truth is, you find this not just in Wiesel's works. You find it in other works as well. So Elie Wiesel said, when was it that I knew that we were free? Right? He was liberated from Auschwitz. So when did I know that we were free? And this is amazing. He said, when after the soldiers came, the liberating soldiers came, I saw people sharing their food rations with each other. He said in the camps, people, for the most part, did not share. You know, we hear the stories about this one, you know, shared all of their rations and this. That was not the norm. The norm was that people got their food, and what did they do with their food? What did they do? They kept it. They kept it. You didn't share it. Now, was that a lack of being adam lechavero that Nebuch, these people who lived through the darkest times in Jewish history, didn't share their food? No, chas v'shalom. It's just that at some point in time, the strongest instinct we have is self-preservation. So they did whatever they could to survive. So Wiesel writes that when I saw people sharing food with each other, then I knew that we were truly free. And perhaps what the Rav is saying over here is the same idea. Do you know how we begin with this invitation? It's not a real invitation. But what it's doing is it's framing the evening. So tonight we're going to celebrate our freedom. Tonight we're going to go ahead and focus on the fact that we were in sheep, but we were enslaved, and now we're free. Very nice. We're free. What does it mean to be free? To which the Baal Haggadah tells us, Kol dichvin yeseh v'yechol, kol disrich yeseh v'yiftzach. To be free means to not only worry about yourself. To be free means not to only be preoccupied with your own needs. To be free means to be cognizant and conscious of the needs of the other. To be free means to figure out, what can I do for you? What can I do for the other? How can I somehow be there? So again, this is not really a real invitation, as we know. This is more us talking to ourselves, reminding ourselves as to what is the true essence of freedom. And the true essence of freedom is not to be self-absorbed. The true essence of freedom is not to be egocentric. The true essence of freedom is not what I can do for myself, but rather instead, what I can do for the other. And in fact, take a look at number, we're going to skip a little bit, number four. So this is a beautiful piece. This is from Rabbi Lau. So Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau, the former chief rabbi of Israel, wrote a parish on the Haggadah called Yachal Yisrael. The truth is, all of Rabbi Lau's works, his Shalos Teshuvos, everything is called Yachal Yisrael. So here, his commentary on the Haggadah, you could buy it, they sell one here in America, but it's like an abridged version. In Eretz Yisrael, they sell a much more expanded version, which is just fantastic. So look what he writes over here. He says, Hashata Avdi L'shana Abba B'nei Chorin. Echad misidrei leil Pesach, arachti b'chel ha'avir. Now, what's great is also he tells incredible stories. So he says, this time when he was the chief rabbi. So he says, every year he used to conduct like a major communal seder. So one year he conducted a seder for the Air Force. Im lamala me'elef mishtatfin, with more than 1,000 participants. You can imagine that. Karasi es ha'agada, halach ma'anya ba'aramit. I read halach ma'anya. V'tirgamti osali ivrit. And I went ahead and I translated into Hebrew. Vihine kam tayisair. So listen to this. So a young pilot stood up and he said, Umavakish Lishol Sheli. He wanted to go ahead and ask a question. He said, Kvod Harav. Now you understand, whenever somebody says, Rabbi, with all due respect, right? So what's about to follow? The antithesis of anything respectful. Right? Sorry. With all due I don't mean to be disrespectful, but so Kvod Harav. And Ishamati es atargum. Shall halach ma'anya mipicha? I heard the way you translated halach ma'anya. Nidmeli sha'avad hakelach akol anusach hazeh. I think that this nusach has lost all meaning for us. You asked about Eretz Yisrael. He says nidmeli sha'tekst hazeh hu pashut lo midaber elenu. So this is a young Israeli Air Force pilot says, I think this verbiage has lost all meaning for us. Tira hashata hacha polish shana abba be'eretz Yisrael. I'm a sabra. He says, I've lived my whole life in Eretz Yisrael. Hashata avdi l'shana ba b'nei chorin. This year we're slaves, next year we're free. What are you talking about? Ma pitom? Hashata avdi. What do you mean? This year we're slaves. Ani nolarati kvar betocha medina. Af pam lo hayiti acha me'asher ben chorin. I've been free my whole life. First of all, just the fact that a Jew could actually make this statement is enough to bring tears to your eyes. That he's right. Right? For 2,000 years, a Jew could not make this statement that I was born in a free Jewish homeland. So this young Air Force pilot is saying, I don't understand, Kvod Harav, what do you tell me this year I'm a slave, this year I'm here, next year I'm an Eretz Yisrael. What do you tell me this year I'm a slave, next year I'm free? I'm free right now. So listen to what Rabbi Lau answered. It's so beautiful. Hashavti lo, habet. So Rabbi Lau said like this. He tells this young pilot, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Rabbi Yom Kippurin. So Rabbi Lau said, I had this chus over my lifetime to spend Yom Kippur with great people. Rav Shach, Zichut Tzadik Livracha. Rav Elia Lopian, Zichut Tzadik Livracha. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Zichut Tzadik Livracha. Hayom HaKadosh Biyosa Shal HaShana. Ukishebevandai Tzarech Lomar, Emes V'Racha Emes. Now, you know, again, even if you have difficulties with telling the truth, it's a good idea to tell the truth on Yom Kippur, right? Just according to most opinions. Right? You know, it's just a good idea on that day to be honest. So look what he writes. He says, Vani Shamati, look, listen to what this is Rabbi Lau saying, what he himself experienced as a young man. Remember, Rabbi Lau came to Eretz Yisrael after the war. He was the youngest survivor of Buchenwald. So he came and he developed a very close relationship with these three rabbanim. Vani Shamati, Bemozni, Osam Omdim Umakim Al Chet. And I heard these great men, Rav Shach, Rav Lopian, Rav Shlomo Zalman, I heard them saying Al Chet, one after the other. Al Chet Shachatan Alfanecha, Ubazeh, Ubazeh, Ubazeh. And I saw them say the Al Chet, just like we all say the Al Chet. Kisha'ata mistakil azeh ba'ofen objektivi, ata mishtah. Eich heim yecholim lomar dvarim keila. And Rav Lau said, I always wondered to myself, how could it be that Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach is clapping his chest for Al Chet, for all of these different averos that he did? Chelkan averos she'alei ne'emar yeharik val yavor. Halo kulonu yodim shem lo avru esa averos ha'ila. So Rabbi Lau says, I don't understand. How is that Shlomo Zalman Arbach is clapping his chest, is crying for all of these sins? The truth is, forget about Shlomo Zalman Arbach. The good news is, we don't violate most of those sins, right? We don't violate most of the others. Those are pretty serious averos. Most regular people don't violate those averos. And yet, Shlomo Zalman Arbach, Rav Shach, they're saying, they're clapping. So what's going on over here? How can they do tshuva? How can they shed hot tears for something that they did not do? As hischati lachshov. So then I began to think to myself. Bedoros Kolman, in earlier generations, amad abal shem tov. So then I began to think back. The truth is, these are not the first rabbanim to say the achitz. The Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, the Vilna Gaon. They also said the achitz. Amdu kol gidoli hadoros va'amru achitz shechatan lefanecha v'chiotziyo mipeyem chalila davar shulo emes. So how could they do tshuva for something that they did not do? And look at Rabbi Lau's answer. Paragraph Gimel, he says that tshuva he says the answer is heim lo chashvu rak al atzmam. The answer is, they weren't just thinking about themselves. Lo kol hazman ani va'ani va'ani. It wasn't all about me, me, me. Tzarech lachshav al azulas. You have to spend your life thinking about the other. Tzarech lachshav al klal yisrael. You have to think about your people. Ki kol yisrael arevim zeh bazeh. Because they both say we are all, you know, the different yourselves of this, whether it's arevim zeh bazeh or arevim zeh lozeh. So arevim zeh lozeh means we're guarantors one another. Arevim zeh bazeh is lashon ta'aroves. We're mixed into one another. We're all part of one collective. Kasher tzadikim halalu bikshu slach lanu mechal lanu kaper lanu al chid shechatanu lefanecha heim chashvu al haklal. Heim lo chashvu al atzmam. So do you think that when Rav Shach hit his heart for al chid shechatan lefanecha for all these crazy averos, he didn't do it, Rav Shlomo Zalman didn't do it, Rav Yopan didn't do it, the Baal Shem didn't do it, the Vilna Gaon didn't do it, but they realized that there were members of Klal Yisrael that did do it. There were Jews who did commit even these most heinous of averos, and therefore when they were doing their tshuva, they weren't just doing their tshuva for themselves, but rather they were doing it on behalf of Poshe Yisrael, on behalf of those who had committed those averos. So Rabbi Lau says to the young pilot, "Kacha davar himshachti ve'amarti benusach hazeh shel ha'agada." This is true with halach ma'anya as well. Ani tzarich tamid lachshav al atzmi. Am I supposed to only think about myself all the time? Ani tzabar, ani nolarti b'soch ha'medina. Look at me, I'm a sabra. I was born in Eretz Yisrael. Good for you. That's exceptional. That's wonderful. Ma'im achivach yosi. What about my brothers and my sisters? Elahan insan. Now this is a little bit dated. Elahan insan. Achshav ma'avar lemesach habarzel. What's mesach habarzel? the Iron Curtain, those behind the Iron Curtain. This is before the falling down of the Iron Curtain. What about all those Jews? Yes, you're lucky you're here. Shkoyach. You're exceptionally lucky. I will say, I think many of us would give anything to be in Eretz Yisrael. I should say, to be able to be in Eretz Yisrael, make a parnas in Eretz Yisrael. So, yeah, you could be in Eretz Yisrael very easily. To make a livelihood there is a little bit more difficult. It might be easier for all of you than it is for me. But in any event, so very nice. You're in Eretz Yisrael. What about everyone else who's not there but wants to be there? You know what? There are Jews all over who can't say these words. You know why? Because they don't have a seder. They don't have even wine or matzah. And some don't even have the knowledge to be able to know what they need to say on this sacred night. Look at these beautiful words. Bo nihia lahem lepeh. Rabbi Lau says to this young Air Force pilot, let's be not just the mouthpiece for ourselves, but let's be the mouthpiece for Klal Yisrael. Let's stop just thinking about ourselves all the time. Let's begin to think about the other. And let's say on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael, Hashota Avdi, it's true, I might be free, but you know what? There are Jews who are not. And also, you know that the freedom that we speak about over here is not just from physical bondage. You know, everyone's enslaved to something. Everyone is shackled to something. You know, Nebuch, we know the terrible tragedy that happened in Flatbush on Shabbos. You know that shackles a person. Can you imagine? We can't imagine. We should never imagine. A father who has to live the rest of his life knowing that he was not home when all of this happened to his family, that's servitude. You're shackled to a reality like that for the rest of your life. People are shackled to familial situations. People are shackled because ultimately of illness situations. Everyone is enslaved to something. So you know what? Maybe you're the lucky one who's not enslaved to anything. Zechisa. So you know what your avodah is on the night of the Seder? Remember everyone else. If you're the lucky one who's free, if you're the tzabar, if you're the sabra and your life is great, and Baruch Hashem, you're not shackled to anything, so take this opportunity to remember the other. Hashata avi l'shana ba b'nei chorin, hashata hach l'shana ba b'arad Yisrael. And Abba says, such a beautiful idea and fits so perfectly with Rav Soloveitchik. Because now if we bring this together, what we begin is halach ma'anya, is not just simply a zecher l'chorban. But I want to point out, by the way, none of the approaches that we're espousing today are mutually exclusive. What time is mincha?
1:50.
Oh, later on. Okay, early. Fine. Yeah. So I'll finish with this. So
time.
It's
quarter to one.
Okay.
We have an hour.
We have an hour.
An hour from now.
Okay. So interestingly enough, so if we bring this all together, I just want to point out, none of these approaches are mutually exclusive. Meaning, so Rav Asher Weiss's idea stands, zecher l'chorban. But what the Rav and Rabbi Lau are really creating is something absolutely amazing. That Halach Ma'anya is here to set the stage for the rest of the Seder. That here it's on this sacred night of the Seder that we're supposed to go out and celebrate our freedom. But before you celebrate anything, you have to understand what freedom means. Rav Soloveitchik said, I'm going to tell you what freedom means. Freedom means the mantra of freedom. The mantra of freedom is Kol Dichvin Yesei V'Yeho. That is the mantra of freedom. If you are in need, I am here to help. If you are in need, you have not just my empathy, but you have my resources behind you as well. If you are in need, I will mobilize to do what I can to help you, because that's what it means to be free. To be free means not to be preoccupied with yourself, but to be able to think about the needs and to be able to reflect on the needs of the other. And Rabbi Lau says that's the meaning of the end, so that even in Eretz Yisrael, they have to say, Hashata Hacha L'Shana Haba Ba'arad Yisrael. Even in Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because even if you're lucky enough to be in Eretz Yisrael, even if you're a free man in Eretz Yisrael, you have to remember your brothers and sisters who are not. You have to remember, ultimately, again, those individuals who are still suffering with difficult circumstances, and you must pledge yourself with your newfound freedom to do the best you can to alleviate their circumstances. I will say, that's the ultimate meaning of freedom. The ability to be there and the ability to feel for the other. Let me just end off with one last piece. Again, I didn't put this on the sheet, so just tell you this outside. So Rabbi Lau has another beautiful piece. He asked the question of why Hashata Hacha L'Shana Habab Ar D'Yisrael, or why this year, why the this year, next year model? And Rabbi Lau says something exceptionally important, which is also very, very pivotal for the Leil HaSeder, which is that, you know, if there's one thing that fuels our people more than anything, it's an unbridled sense of optimism. We are the most optimistic, hopeful people that you can, you know, when I just took a group to Eretz Yisrael, and when you go through the, you know, the Shtachim, so there's a phrase that you keep hear people saying. And the phrase that they keep saying is, Bivinyana Tinachamena. Through building it, we'll be consoled. Every single time there's a tragedy, the response to tragedy is building. And what you wonder to yourself, like, where does a mindset like that come from? It comes, now whether you agree politically or ideologically is irrelevant. The point is it comes from the Jewish neshama, which is this idea that we're eternally hopeful. We're eternally optimistic. But Rabbi Lau says something very important. He says, optimism must be rooted in realism. Because if optimism is not rooted in any type of realistic construct, then what happens? What happens? Right? So what ends up happening is people become inappropriately optimistic, which then when their optimism is not actualized, it could lead to a defeatist attitude as well. So you need optimism, but optimism must be tempered with realism. Rabbi Lau says something amazing. Rabbi Lau says, we know that our lives as individuals and our lives as a people will change. We know that things will get better. We know that Mashiach will come. We know that Geula will come. And we believe that it could happen every single day, but we also know that sometimes change takes time. Sometimes change is gradual. And sometimes the things that we want as individuals and as a people will take a little bit more time. We're a little bit impatient, but we'll take a little bit more time. And Rabbi Lau therefore says that's why Chazal chose this verbiage of Hashata Avdi L'Shana Haba B'nei Chorin. Hashata Hacha L'Shana Haba B'nei Chorin. This year we're slaves. This year I have difficult circumstances. Could it be that my circumstances are going to change tomorrow? Is that possible? Is that possible? Absolutely. Anything's possible. This year I'm here. Could it be that tomorrow I'm in Eretz Yisrael with Mashiach? Is it possible? Anything's possible. But the more probable, realistic approach is that things take time. Things take time. To change my personal circumstances takes time. To change our national circumstances takes time. And so you have to go ahead and be able sometimes to give life change a little bit of time to that. What's that? I'll tell you. You know, when I, on the Pesach Seder, when I go with my children to the door, to open the door for Eliyahu HaNavi, so I tell my children before I open the door, I said, you know, you have to believe, before you open it, you have to believe with all of your heart that Eliyahu HaNavi could be there. You have to believe that he could be standing on the other side of the door. But if we open it up and he's not there, we could be disappointed for a couple of moments, but then we have to move on and believe he's going to be here tomorrow. That's and if he's not going to be here tomorrow, we believe that it might take a little bit of time for Eliyahu HaNavi to come, but we never lose hope. So that optimism has to be rooted in realism. So if we bring everything together, and again, the amazing part is, this is only halach mayim. This is why it takes 4 hours to get to dinner, right? Because again, it's amazing. This is one little paragraph. And by the way, this is not even like the part of the Ikra Haggadah, right? This is an add-on. This is an add-on. This is not even part of formal magid. But the amazing part is, first of all, you see yourself like Ashreinu Matov Chalkinu. We are so lucky to be Jews, and we are so lucky to have a Torah, and we're so lucky to have a Pesach, and we're so privileged to have a Seder, and we're so lucky, and don't look at us, you know, there are two times that you shouldn't look at your watch. The two times are, right, Yom Kippur in general, specifically by Ne'ilah, right? The rabbi's speech. Oh, that's number one, the rabbi's speech. The rabbi's speech, you can look at your watch. Right? But, and the Leil HaSeder, because they both say the truth is, it's an opportunity just to lose yourself in the embrace of the Ribono Shel Olam. And all that Kodesh Baruch Hu wants us to do is to really not just feel free, but to really be free. And what we learn from this little paragraph of Halach Ma'anya is to be free requires two things. Let's go a little bit out of order. To be free means to have an unbridled sense of optimism, but an optimism that is tempered and peppered with realism. It must be rooted in some type of realistic framework. That's what it means to be free. And number two, to be free means to never live an egocentric life. To be free means always to look out for the other. To be free means to be preoccupied with the other. To be free ultimately means that I use my abilities, my emotional, my material resources to try to improve the plight and the life of the other. That's true freedom. And as we all know, there's nothing that makes a person feel better about themselves than when they're able to give to the other. So we should be zochim yirat Hashem in the schus of preparing for the seder in the proper way, in the schus of really trying to understand what it means to be free, that we should be zochim yirat Hashem when we come to Leila HaSeder to emerge at whatever time our Seder ends with a true sense of freedom, with a true sense of purpose, with truly a reinvigorated sense of optimism for the beautiful future that life holds for us as individuals and as a people, and with a renewed sense of commitment and love for the other. Shkoyach.